It is Tuesday, March 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea indicates there's no need to keep its nuclear program if military threats are removed. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan says possible new U.S. tariffs need to be more clearly defined.
But I think the smarter way to go is to make it more surgical and more targeted.
And the catchphrase, Philadelphia Special, surges after the Super Bowl. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump says possible progress is being made with North Korea. But he also cautions that positive signs from Pyongyang may lead to false hope. Trump's statement on Twitter come after South Korea said Tuesday the North is willing to start talks with the United States about giving up its nuclear weapons. South Korea's top security advisor told reporters on Tuesday that Pyongyang signaled there was no need to keep its nuclear program if military threats against the country are eliminated. He added North Korea was receptive to discussing denuclearization and normalizing relations with the U.S. VOA North Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul tells me about Tuesday's developments on the Korean Peninsula.
It seems like there's been a somewhat of a breakthrough today. It remains to be seen if the U.S. will engage in these types of talks, but the two Koreas have agreed to hold a summit in April between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. There was a South Korean envoy who went out from Seoul to Pyongyang on Monday and met with the North Korean leader, and that they discussed how to improve inter-Korean relations, how to build upon this last month or so of just kind of an Olympic truce, whereby North Korea participated in the recent Olympics in South Korea, and there have been no provocations for about 3 months now, and North Korea has said they are open to improving relations with South Korea. South Korean President Moon Jae-in has been intent on pushing not just for improved relations, but on the parallel track to say, for these relations to improve, we also have to address the North Korean nuclear issue. And the U.S. in particular demand that it halt any further tests and agree to, in the long term perhaps, give up its nuclear weapons. North Korea has apparently agreed to these terms and said, as long as they are engaged in talks with the U.S. about resolving the nuclear crisis here on the Korean Peninsula, they will not conduct any nuclear tests or missile tests. There's a lot of skepticism about this, and I think we're going to see U.S. reaction in the days to come, whether or not they're willing to engage on these terms. The U.S. and the Trump administration had said that they are willing to talk to North Korea, but said that North Korea would have to agree first to give up their nuclear weapons. There has been some gray area about what does that mean. Does it mean that they have to take concrete action in dismantling maybe their nuclear reactor? Or is a pause in these provocative tests that have been happening continuously now for almost 2 years, a significant pause, is that enough to get things started? And we'll see if this holds, but it's certainly a step in the direction that the U.S. has been wanting and that South Korea has been pushing for.
Has there been any, at least public talk yet, about conducting, say, nuclear inspections of laboratories where this work is done on both sides?
You know, what we're getting now are just these kind of initial indications and initial agreement. These other issues will have to be taken in time, and that's a good point. Will there be some verifiable inspectors allowed in to make sure there are no testing happening, or is this only an agreement by North Korea to not conduct any provocations that can be witnessed by satellite from the outside world? Because there are indications that they are still, the North Koreans, still working on some of their nuclear facilities in the country and building them up. So, you know, there could be continued development within laboratories, particularly on North Korea's goal of developing a long-range intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead that could target cities in the U.S. mainland. They have done testing in the last 2 years. They have tested long-range missiles that have the capacity to reach the U.S. Last year, they conducted a couple of long-range missiles of that type, but they don't yet have the operational capability to target specific sites.
Well, another point of contention between the U.S. and North Korea, the U.S. holds regular military exercises with South Korea, and I believe they were scheduled or are scheduled to take place fairly soon, but you know, is there any word on that?
Well, they were delayed for the Olympics. The U.S. agreed to delay them to encourage North Korea's participation and ensure that there'd be no sort of provocation or conflict during the Games. The Paralympics are starting this week. And so the South Korean Defense Ministry reiterated today there'd be no announcements on the schedule for the test or the scope of the test until March 18th, and that's when the Paralympics end.
VOA North Asia correspondent Brian Patton reporting from Seoul. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stories that could have been rating high in social media today. Obviously, just listening to not only the North-South Korea story, but the newscasts and whatnot, there's a lot going on out there. So it really could have been anything. And then yesterday, a guy named Sam Nunberg woke up. Sam Nunberg is a former Trump campaign associate. He'd worked on the Trump campaign. He's a close ally of Roger Stone. They have a close working relationship. Both were, of course, dispatched by the president. And on Friday, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who is investigating the whole Russia affair, I suppose, in the 2016 election, he subpoenaed Sam Nunberg to come speak this Friday before the grand jury. And for some reason, Sam Nunberg just decided, nope, I'm not going to go speak with him. I'm not. He can throw me in jail. And he didn't just decide this sort of quietly. He kind of took to the media in this, people are just calling it a dumpster fire. He spoke with the Associated Press. He spoke with the Washington Post. He spoke with Bloomberg News. He gave three interviews to CNN, two to MSNBC, and he wasn't even finished at that point. and a lot of people were asking what he called Sarah Huckabee Sanders a fat slob. He referred to the president repeatedly as an idiot. He threatened Corin Lewandowski with violence. So people were wondering what the heck was going on. A lot of people sharing some of their thoughts about what might have been going on. A white man here, so somebody says, has this on Twitter, a white man who has a law degree and worked on the campaign of the president can have a meltdown of epic proportions on national TV, but Republicans think we should drug test food stamp recipients. The hashtag Nunberg, by the way, is trending really, really big at this point. Being serious, here's Travis Allen. Being serious for a moment, I hope Mr. Nunberg is either arrested or involuntarily committed to a hospital for evaluation. He seemed completely disheveled, intoxicated, or even suicidal during that interview. Of course, he gave several interviews. One journalist, Aaron Burnett on CNN, asked him point blank, are you drunk? Oh. Have you been drinking? He denied it. But that's not stopped a lot of people from his behavior was just bizarre. Here's somebody who writes, Nunberg is like that guy who keeps losing at a drinking game and everybody else is sober but him. So lots of people, you know, commenting on what was just an odd occurrence. Very strange. Mr. Nunberg says he now may cooperate with the special counsel. We'll have to see. But I think at this point, we just kind of hope maybe he's getting a little rest.
Thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. A U.S. rights official says Myanmar's ethnic cleansing of the Rohingyas continues. A Russian transport plane crashes in Syria, killing 32 people. The source of a deadly listeria outbreak in South Africa has been discovered, and Russia says it's ready to help Britain investigate the illness of a former spy. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA. We'll be right back.
This is Science in a Minute.
Those looking for the possible habitability of Proxima Centauri b, the closest exoplanet to Earth, may have had their hopes dashed by new findings about the planet's parent star. When the exoplanet, a mere 4.24 light-years from Earth, was first discovered, scientists found it was located within the habitable zone of its star, where orbiting planets similar to Earth could support liquid water and possibly sustain life. But in March of 2017, scientists detected a massive stellar flare, an explosion of high-energy radiation blasting from the exoplanet's star, Proxima Centauri. The researchers found that the monster's solar flare at its peak was 10 times brighter than our sun's largest flares. If life existed on Proxima Centauri b, this huge flare may have wiped it out. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the phrase Philadelphia Special is becoming popular in the place known as the City of Brotherly Love. We'll have a report. The White House says that President Trump, in a phone call with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, has emphasized his commitment to a free trade agreement among the U.S., Canada, and Mexico that is fair to all three countries. The two leaders talk Monday in the midst of ongoing negotiations in Mexico City over revamping the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement, and days after Trump said he plans to impose a 25% tariff on steel imports to the U.S. and 10% on aluminum, both of which would hit Canada, a big exporter of the metals to the United States. Trump on Monday tied the tariff issue with ongoing negotiations with Canada and Mexico on changing NAFTA.
We've had a very bad deal with Mexico, a very bad deal with Canada, called NAFTA. Our factories have left our country, our jobs have left our country. For many years, NAFTA has been a disaster. We are renegotiating NAFTA, as I said I would, and if we don't make a deal, I'll terminate NAFTA. But if I do make a deal which is fair to the workers and to the American people, that would be, I would imagine, one of the points that we'll negotiate. It will be tariffs on steel for Canada and for Mexico. So we'll see what happens. But right now, 100%, but it could be a part of NAFTA. And I understand I just got a call from the people who are right now in Mexico City negotiating NAFTA. Mexico and really Canada want to talk about it. But if they aren't going to make a fair NAFTA deal, we're just going to leave it this way.
The comments prompted Trudeau to call Trump to tell him the tariff issue would be an impediment to progress on NAFTA. Well, meanwhile, Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Paul Ryan urged caution on Tuesday.
There is clearly abuse occurring. Clearly, there is overcapacity, dumping, and transshipping of steel and aluminum by some countries, particularly China. But I think the smarter way to go is to make it more surgical and more targeted. So I think 232 is a little too broad, and I think it's more prone to retaliation. And so what we're encouraging the administration to do is to focus on what is clearly a legitimate problem and to be more surgical in its approach so that we can go after the true abusers without creating any kind of unintended consequences or collateral damage.
Economist Gary Huffbauer of the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics tells International Edition's Victor Beatty tying tariffs to the future of NAFTA could doom the trade pact.
The Canadian and Mexican public reaction to this, I'm not talking about the politician, I'm talking about the general people, they see this as bullying by the United States, which reduces the flexibility of their leaders to make concessions because it seems that they would be kowtowing to the bully. So I think it's less likely that we will get the outcome which has been sought by Ambassador Lighthizer and President Trump and Secretary Ross now than it was, let's say, 48 hours ago. I didn't think it was great 48 hours ago, but I'd say it's even less likely right now.
In a remarkably public confrontation, the House Speaker Paul Ryan and other Republican allies of the president pleaded with him to back away from his threatened international tariffs. They said they fear it could spark a trade war.
They are right. Whether we get to a trade war will depend very much on the reaction of other countries. The tariffs alone aren't a trade war, but if other countries react by putting fairly strong restrictions on U.S. exports, you could say we're edging into a trade battle and it may escalate to a trade war. So right now, the action is in Brussels with the European Union and in Ottawa with Canada and Mexico City with Mexico as to exactly what they do. If they just protest but don't put on any retaliatory tariffs or quotas on U.S. exports, then you could say we're not, you know, we haven't gotten to the trade war. But that remains to be seen in the next, I would say, within the next week.
The Director General of the World Trade Organization, Roberto Azevedo, warned that the first dominoes tipping in a trade war that would be hard to reverse and trigger a deep recession.
He has a reason to be concerned. First of all these actions, both by the United States and likely retaliatory actions by other countries, are outside and well outside the framework of WTO rules. So that's making the WTO less relevant. Depending on how strong the reactions are and then the counter reactions, because President Trump has warned that if Europe reacts, he will put a tax on U.S. imports of autos from Europe. That's a counter reaction of major, major proportions.
Gary Huffbauer of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. A company's value is often tied to the message it portrays to customers. But what happens when other companies try to take advantage of your brand? Take the Philadelphia Eagles, for instance. The American football team wants to exclusively own the phrase Philly Special. That was the trick play that helped them win the Super Bowl. But several other businesses filed their own trademark applications ahead of the Eagles. And as Matt Petrillo reports, it's not the first time entrepreneurs have tried cashing in on a winning phrase.
The Philly Special is by far the most talked about play of the Super Bowl.
You want Philly, Philly?
This was Eagles quarterback Nick Foles asking his coach during the game if the team can execute the play. It's a gutsy move. In football speak, it's a direct snap reverse pass to Foles, who usually throws the ball. But the coach gives the okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
And Foles tells his teammates the plan in a huddle.
Philly Special. Ready?
The team lines up. Foles runs up the field. The football is thrown by tight end Trey Burton, and Foles catches it in the end zone for the winning touchdown. The stadium erupts.
Woo! Let's go!
Now the phrase, Philly Special, has turned into a citywide phenomenon. Bakeries are making Philly Special pastries. Some people are getting the words tattooed on themselves. And stores like Ashley Peel's Philadelphia Independence cannot keep enough Philly Special t-shirts in stock.
Oh, it's the Nick Foles play of the century, as I'm dubbing it. I'm sure everyone else is too. From the Super Bowl, has a layout of like the football specs of the play. So we just got it in a couple days, and we're almost already sold out of it. So it's definitely moving well.
It's moving well, even as several entrepreneurs are competing to be awarded a trademark. In other words, exclusive rights to the phrase.
I do have a client that has applied for the Mark Philly Special.
Philadelphia-based lawyer Nancy Rupner-Franson filed a trademark application on behalf of a company called Wellhead Associates. She can't comment too much about the application without violating attorney-client privilege, but she admits the phrase goes beyond a football play.
Obviously, it brings everybody together. It was, you know, of course, our Super Bowl championship that brought it all about. It's got the term Philly in it, which is, from the trademark standpoint, it would be deemed to be descriptive. But then you combine it with the term special, and it could make for a very unique trademark.
Just some of the other businesses that want to trademark the term include a sandwich maker, a gift shop manufacturer, and the Philadelphia Eagles. The team was actually the last to file a trademark application, even though experts say it's likely the rights will be awarded to the team.
This particular term ideally should belong to the Eagles.
Jay Sinha is a marketing professor at Temple University. He says this is not the first time a group of people rushed to trademark a term after a big event like the Super Bowl. And it's even got a name. It's called newsjacking.
Yes, the term newsjacking means where a company rides or takes advantage of some event happening in current affairs and uses it for their own commercial purposes, especially for marketing and branding.
Think of famous movie lines like "May the Force be with you" from Star Wars. When sequels of the movie are released, other companies often try to take advantage of the film's popularity for marketing purposes, like an ice cream shop that posts a sign reading, "May the Swirl be with you."
If there's anything which is very relevant in the popular culture as well as the news, companies like to ride on it.
In this case, it will likely be several months before we find out who wins the rights to the now famous phrase. By then, though, another Super Bowl will be approaching, and Sinha says the excitement of the Philly special could be fading. In Philadelphia, I'm Matt Petrillo for VOA News.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States stands with the Venezuelan people and supports free and fair elections in Venezuela. The United States government respects the decision by Venezuelan opposition parties, most recently the Democratic Unity Roundtable, to reject President Nicolas Maduro's terms and conditions for the May presidential elections. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said, "We reject ruling party calls to replace the democratically elected National Assembly simultaneously, rather than in 2021, as provided for under the 1999 Constitution. Deepening the rupture of Venezuela's constitutional and democratic order will not solve the nation's crises." Ms. Nauert reiterated the United States' call for the establishment of a legitimate and independent National Electoral Council, selected by the National Assembly as required by the Constitution. "We renew our call for the establishment of an electoral calendar in compliance with the Constitution and in consultation with the legitimate National Assembly," she added. The failure to meet agreed terms for a transparent electoral process seriously compromises the integrity of the election. "A free and fair election," stressed spokesperson Nauert, "should include the full participation of all political parties and political leaders, the immediate and unconditional release of all political prisoners, a proper electoral calendar, credible international observation, and an independent electoral authority." The people of Venezuela are falling into poverty at an alarming rate as inflation caused by economic mismanagement and corruption spirals out of control. Although reliable statistics are hard to come by in Venezuela due to government censorship, the 2017 Living Conditions Survey, conducted by three Venezuelan universities, highlighted the human cost of Venezuela's crisis. 3 out of 4 Venezuelans who previously did not consider themselves to be poor now report that they are living in poverty. The United States stands with democratic nations around the world in support of the Venezuelan people and their sovereign right to elect their representatives through free and fair elections.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.